You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for joining us today on the Locked On Jets podcast on this Friday, February 23rd, the year 2018. I am John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe to it. Your options to do so include iTunes and Spotify. And if you enjoy it, please leave the show a good rating in iTunes. Certainly appreciate it. Today's show is going to be about things I've gotten wrong. And I think that when you analyze the NFL, it's always a good idea to bring a certain degree of humility to the proceedings, especially when you're making predictions, prognostications. Inherently, you're taking on a task which is very difficult because you're trying to predict the futures of human beings, and human beings are not very predictable. There are a lot of factors that go into what happens in the NFL. So anytime you make a prediction, you're kind of taking on a fool's errand. And whenever some pundit gets something wrong, whenever somebody gets something wrong, a couple months later, someone will go back and laugh at it. And I always think that's kind of unfair because if you make predictions, you're going to make a lot of wrong predictions. Things are just unpredictable. This is an unpredictable league. And again, human nature is unpredictable. You know, you can never predict with any certain degree of certainty what's going to happen. And it's a good thing for me to remember. It's a good thing for you to remember as we head into the off season. And one of the things I've tried to get better at through the years is qualifying my statements by saying, I think, using words like probably, because you never know for sure. You really don't. And as I said, many instances, the predictions where I've gotten the most trouble is when I was too confident in something. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with making predictions. I don't think there's anything wrong with analyzing players, signings, transactions. But you always have to remember that certain things are unpredictable in this league. And anytime I come across somebody who's too confident in something, that tells me that A, they either don't know what they're talking about, or B, they haven't been doing this for very long. Because anybody who's been doing this for any length of time understands that you're going to get a lot of things wrong. So if you're really, really confident, if you're overconfident, if you're speaking definitively about things frequently, now every now and then I think there's a case where there's evidence so overwhelming that maybe you can have a lot of confidence. But if you're doing this all the time, you either don't know what you're talking about or you haven't been doing this for very long, and you will learn very quickly that things are unpredictable in the NFL. So with that in mind, I'm going to give you three things in the past about the Jets that I was really confident in that did not pan out, or maybe you could share some of yours. And I do this with some degree of trepidation because, you know, you may listen to this and say, well, why am I listening to this guy's podcast if he got these things so wrong? Or, you know, maybe give me 2 stars in iTunes, as somebody else did, as we talked about earlier in the week. But I think it's important to know that sometimes you just get stuff wrong. So, and it's good to look back and laugh at the silly things you got wrong. So all three of them, I'm going to give you 3 examples, and all 3 of them actually predate this podcast. So I don't know why I'm doing that, because there was no evidence around on this show if you went back and listened to past episodes. But I'm going to go ahead and tell you, and maybe you can tell me some of your bad predictions, you know, bad predictions where you were overconfident. On the first one, we're going to go back 4 years, and it was a guy the Jets drafted, the tight end out of Texas Tech in the 2nd round, Jason Morrow. And I'll tell you, I thought this guy was going to be an absolute superstar. And I don't think I'm not underselling. I really thought he was going to be one of the best tight ends in the NFL. I thought he was going to be a matchup nightmare. And it just did not pan out at all. It was, frankly, one of the more disastrous picks in recent memory for the Jets, which is saying quite a bit. You know, he was extremely productive in college. He was a prolific receiving tight end. And looking back on it, I think there were a few things that I missed. And the first of which is just that he was playing against really bad defenses in the Big 12. And there's no way around it. That conference has a reputation for inflated offensive numbers, you know, teams going crazy. And part of it's that the coaching is really good. Part of it's that the offenses have talent. Part of it's just though that the defenses are really bad. You know, nobody plays defense in that conference. TCU usually has a good defense. I mean, there are some teams that have a good defense, but for the most part, that is an offensive conference. It's a conference that doesn't play a lot of defense. And I mean, heck, there were some games where I'm watching players this year, you know, some of the Oklahoma prospects, and I'm like, is that team even playing defense? This looks like an 11-on-nothing drill. So I think that may have been one of the things that I missed. I think another thing that I missed was just the system Amaro played in at Texas Tech, where under Coach Cliff Kingsbury. Now, Kingsbury, if you don't know his history, he's actually a former Jet. He played for the Jets during that disastrous 2005 season, which we'll actually talk about in a few minutes. That season where they actually had five quarterbacks take the field at one point, which was just an utter nightmare. But before that, before he was in the NFL, he was the quarterback at Texas Tech. He was the quarterback at the school he coaches now. And he played under a coach named Mike Leach, who is now the head coach at Washington State. And Leach has never really gotten a big-time job. It's really due to his personality. He has some baggage. He's kind of a weird guy. So I think a lot of big-time colleges don't love the idea of having him as the face of the program, where a lot of his job would come down to meeting with boosters who give the program money, you know, try and ask for money, stuff like that. When you're at a big-time college, there are a lot of public appearances. So I think some people who run those programs are a little leery of giving a guy like Leach a job like that. But the reason I talk about him is that I think in terms of pure X's and O's, he is the best offensive coach at any level. And Kingsbury learned from him. Kingsbury installed the system at Texas Tech, and Amaro thrived in it like many players do. So I think maybe I missed how much the system played into Amaro's success. I think I missed how much the bad Big 12 defenses played into Amaro's success. And I just missed on how athletic he was. He really wasn't as athletic as I thought he'd be. It just did not translate. What I thought I saw on film just wasn't there once he got to the NFL. And I think the ultimate sign that Amaro was not an NFL player is the fact that Jets cut him in 2016 out of training camp at a time where they had no tight ends on the team. I mean, they had, you remember how bad the Jets' tight ends were during 2016, and they cut him. And the other thing is, Amaro, you know, there was a lot of speculation that Amaro had some problems with the coaching staff. The coaching staff did not like Amaro, and that this was a case where the coaching staff was playing favorites, and they didn't know how to use Amaro, and that he was going to go somewhere else and really show the Jets what they were missing. And as it turns out, that did not happen. Amaro's done nothing. He has done zero since he left the Jets. So you can't really say that this is anybody's fault. He's just not a good player. He's not a good prospect. And I mean, I had high hopes for him. I thought he was going to be Travis Kelce. That's what I thought he was going to be. So that was a total whiff on my part. I don't know how, looking back on it, I say, my God, what was I thinking on that one? Attention cancer patients, if you or a loved one lived, worked, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the 9/11 attacks and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Zadroga Health and Compensation Act has been extended, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but to anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast. Call 1-833-LAW-HELP. That's 1-833-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify. We started in 2014. Let's go back 9 years to the 2005 season. And this one's not an evaluation about a player. It's an evaluation about a team. And I will tell you that I really thought 2005 was the Jets' year. I thought that that was a team that had a chance to go to the Super Bowl. They were coming off a 2004 season where they were a playoff team. They'd won 10 games, and they had taken the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were 15-1 that year in the divisional round, to the very end, and they should have won the game, to be honest with you. I mean, that was the game Doug Bryan missed the two field goals in Pittsburgh, and I thought that the Jets were really going to build off that. I thought that they were on their way to a very bright future. They had seemed like they had a franchise quarterback in Chad Pennington, and they made a number of big-ticket acquisitions that offseason. They got Lavernius Coles back in a trade with Washington. They signed Ty Law, who was a number one corner, a number one type corner. And perhaps most importantly is they changed their offensive coordinator. They finally fired Paul Hackett, who had been around for too long, and brought in Mike Heimerdinger. And, you know, the Jets have had a lot of bad offensive coordinators through the years. They have had a lot of terrible offensive coordinators through the years. I don't think that any of them was as bad as Hackett, though. I mean, Hackett was just a guy who, the overly conservative offense, never taking shots down the field, the draws on third and long, over and over and over. No adjustments, no, you know, sense of how to attack an opponent's weaknesses. I could go on and on. I think the only guy who would even come close to Hackett would be Tony Sperano. But Sperano was only around for 1 year. I mean, you had to deal with Hackett for 4 years. He probably should have been, well, he should have never been hired, but he certainly never should have been retained for 4 years. I thought that that was a bad decision by the Jets, but they had finally moved on. And they had a team, again, that was coming off a very good season, a season where they came within a field goal of going to the AFC Championship game. But there were signs of trouble if you were willing to look hard enough, and I don't think I was. First of all, the team lost a couple contributors in free agency. They lost Kareem McKenzie at right tackle, and they lost Jason Ferguson, the nose tackle. And those were things that were easy to gloss over, but the Jets ultimately missed those guys. Beyond that, though, Pennington was coming off some serious injuries. He needed surgery in the offseason. He actually got hurt in 2004, around the midway part of the season, came back, and in retrospect, you wonder whether maybe he shouldn't have. So he suffered a serious shoulder injury. There's plenty of questions surrounding that. The Jets actually went out and signed Jay Fiedler, who was considered a pretty good backup option in case Pennington wasn't ready to go at the start of the season. But as things progressed through training camp, it looked like Pennington would be ready. He was ready week one, which was a just catastrophic game. They played a miserable game against Kansas City, got blown out, really got embarrassed. I mean, it was everything that went wrong, could have gone wrong, went wrong in that game. Week two, they come back and beat Miami, beat the Dolphins at home, and it seemed like the ship had been righted. And then you got to week three against Jacksonville, which was, it turned into a catastrophic game. They lost in overtime. The rookie punt returner Justin Miller muffed a punt late in the game. But more importantly, Pennington got hurt again, and Pennington would end up missing the rest of the season. And not only did Pennington get hurt, Jay Fiedler got hurt. The backup got hurt in that game. He was out for the season. Pennington left the game at one point. Fiedler came in, and actually the offense started looking pretty good for a few plays, and then Fiedler took a hit and got hurt. So Pennington had to return to the game. Pennington actually finished the game, but he was out for the season again because he was hurt, and the season just fell apart from that point. They actually had to bring the ancient Vinny Testaverde back. Brooks Bollinger played at some points, and Kingsbury got into one game, I think. He got in for mop-up duty at one point, so the Jets actually played five quarterbacks that season. Now, looking back again, I think there were some things that I missed. I think there were some pretty clear warning signs when it comes to the free agents they lost, but more so Pennington's status, where Pennington was coming off a serious injury. I think it was a situation where I wanted things to go well, so maybe I ignored the problems with the team. It was pretty clear when you watch that week one game against the Chiefs in particular, that Pennington's ball just did not have a lot of life to it. And Pennington was never known as a big-armed quarterback, but he was always a guy who had enough, and you could just tell how weak his throws were looking that week one game. And I don't think I properly took that into account. And even if he had not gotten hurt, I'm not sure what that team ceiling was. I think maybe that was a team that, it wasn't a team that was going to build on 10 wins. It would have been a team that maybe would have done well to win 10 again. I'm not sure it was a team that was ready to compete with the heavyweights of the league that year. And I thought it was. And it was just one that, again, I was wrong on. And that's unfortunate because it was really one of the few instances where I went into a season thinking the Jets could win a Super Bowl. There haven't been many of those. There was the Parcells era. There was that year, and then a couple of years in the Rex era. There haven't been many years where I went into the season legitimately thinking the Jets could have a Super Bowl roster. That was one of them, and that was one that was just a swing and a miss for me. I'd like to end on a positive note, since the first two were things that I thought would go well that did not go well. So we'll go with something that I did not think was a good move at the time that turned out to be a great move. And we just talked about the 2005 season, so let's flash forward a few months to the NFL draft. And yes, I will tell you, I was one of those people that did not want DeBrickashaw Ferguson. I was one of those people that wanted one of the flashy USC guys, either Reggie Bush or Matt Leinart. Bush at the time was viewed as the next Gale Sayers. He was viewed as a franchise type back, a guy who was going to be a surefire Hall of Famer. Now, the thing is, Reggie Bush actually had a good career in the NFL. I don't think you could say he was a bad player. He was actually a pretty productive player. Just relative to the expectations, he was a major disappointment. You know, he was supposed to be a Hall of Fame level back. And to be fair, he was not the type of back, even though he was a successful NFL player, he was not really the type of back who ever justified the number two overall pick. But the guy I really wanted, the guy I really had my eye on, was Matt Leinart, the quarterback out of USC. And yes, I was one of those people. And you know, you hear about those people now. It's like, oh, those people that didn't want to break a shot. I will readily admit that I was one of those people, and I was wrong. And Leinart, I saw a guy who was one of the great college quarterbacks who ever played, won the Heisman Trophy, won two national championships, came within one play of winning a third. And in that third championship game, I mean, he was great in the second half. He and Vince Young had a duel, and both of them really played a great game that night. You know, Young lives on in history because of the comeback he led, but easy to forget how good Leinart was in the second half. So I thought that this guy was really a can't miss. And I'll tell you, there were only three quarterbacks I ever thought would, in the years I've been watching football, there are only three quarterbacks I ever thought who I would be genuinely surprised if they did not turn into a great NFL quarterback. You know, three guys I would bet the mortgage on, three guys I'd bet the ranch on. And one was Peyton Manning, one was Andrew Luck, and the third was Leinart. And I'll tell you, there are not any quarterbacks. I like some quarterbacks in this year's class. There's not anybody I would bet the mortgage on. Leinart was one of them just because of the college success, because he had played a pro-type offense, had success there. Again, the accolades, the championships, the winning. I thought he was going to be great, and he just wasn't. He was, when I said Bush put together a good NFL career, Leinart did not. Leinart was pretty much a backup in the NFL. Did not last very long, and now he's an analyst on Fox for college football. At a point where his career still could be, you know, he still could be playing if he was more successful. So that did not pan out. What the Jets did get was DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who of course was a 10-year player at the left tackle position. Now, look, was DeBrickashaw a legend? Is he going to Canton? No. Is he as good as the guy who was taken the first left tackle off the board the next year, which was Joe Thomas, who the Browns drafted? No. Joe Thomas is a legendary player. But you know something? DeBrickashaw Ferguson did everything possible to justify the investment the Jets made in him. He was a worthy, top, high first-round pick. Guy gives you 10 years and is good as DeBrickashaw Ferguson, you have to be very happy, particularly at a premium position like DeBrickashaw played at left tackle. He's a Ring of Honor player and really a great Jet. He was a guy who represented the franchise well on and off the field. And I will tell you that this is one that, again, another swing and a miss, but this is one that I think I could be very happy that I was wrong about, because I think that this was an excellent pick. And you look back at what the Jets could have done, and it would have been a terrible decision. Those would have been terrible decisions. And through the years, the Jets have not made many good decisions. I'll tell you, if there's one constant in the years I've been watching the Jets, it's that they make a lot of dumb decisions. They make a lot of bad decisions. They make a lot of decisions that I think will be good at the time that don't pan out. But this was one that I did not love that turned into a great decision. So credit to the Jets, and I'm happy to be wrong about that one. those are all the bad predictions I can bear to tell you about. So that'll do it for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to it. Options include iTunes and Spotify. And please leave the show a good review in iTunes if you enjoy it. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday to talk more about the Jets.